This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 187 for Wednesday, April 13th, 2016. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. We cover everything from movies and television to books, apps, and websites. Joining me tonight is Mr. Lou Page, 1 year older. Happy birthday, sir.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Getting older is not fun. and it's even worse when both of your parents mistake the age and think you're older than you are.
Ouch. Ouch.
Yeah.
Ouch. That's no good. I mean, you're still, look at it this way, dude. You're still younger than me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Have you hit the big 30 yet?
Oh yeah. No, no. I'm not ashamed to admit I'm 34 as of yesterday.
Oh, you're a lot closer to my age than I thought you were.
Yeah.
See what I did there?
Yep.
Sounds like the parents making the mistake is just a cut that you can't heal. Like
No. My the year before, my mom forgot and called me like 3 days later. It was like, happy birthday. I'm like, Ma, that was 3 days ago. She's like, oh, oops. And this year she said, you're 36, right? No, I'm not 36. I said, are you 60? And she went, I have to do the math. I'm like, you're not 60, Ma. You're not 60.
Yeah. It's, it's easy to remember my parents' ages because I don't do the math from their birth date. I just know that they're 36 and 35 years older than me.
Yep. Yep.
So yeah. 36 and 33. Sorry.
Yep.
But yeah, it's hard to deal with like, the whole getting older thing as you march into your mid and late 30s. I have a birthday coming up at the end of the month. I'm going to be 37. And I was talking with Chad the other day. His birthday was on the 11th, actually, one of the guys that started the show with me. So he's now 37. And I asked him, like, are you feeling the grind to 40 yet? And he was like, nah, you know, maybe in a few years. But this is the first time, because I remember 29 being kind of a big deal. And then 30, of course, was kind of a fun party, but 29 felt like not doom and gloom, but it felt like there was a change coming.
Yep.
But 28, I didn't care. I was 28.
Age didn't mean anything until I hit 30. And then when I was turning 30, I was like, oh, this is kind of depressing. I was real depressed for a couple of days. And my wife was like, just relax, take a vacation. And do something fun. So I spent the entire day of my 30th birthday going to arcades and doing fun stuff that I did as a kid.
Nice.
And being a kid all day. So
that's great. It's not age like, not so much physical age. I mean, I feel physically old these days only because I'm slowly but surely getting back into shape. And when you're coming off of a long time of being unable to exercise because I had some back issues. And then slowly getting back into things, you feel old as you're trying to get back into shape. Now, ask me again midsummer, and I might feel a lot different.
Oh, yeah.
But it's the only... And I know that age is just a number. And I have a very youthful profession. I mean, I draw cartoons all day long. So, I mean, there's a lot of things like that that keep me young and, like, mentally. And I get compliments all the time from people that say that they assume I'm a lot younger than I am.
I luck out. I'm very short, and I have a very young-looking face. Mm-hmm. I've been mistaken as an intern at work before. And they're like, so what high school did you just graduate from? I'm like, no, I'm in my 30s, man. I've worked here for 10 years. How do you not know who I am?
Yeah, it's funny how for guys, you're just like, come on. And then girls are just like, well, thank you.
Yep.
You get carded at the liquor store and you're, you know, 32 and, you know, usually people are just like, ooh, I'll take that compliment. And someone cards me at the liquor store and I'm just kind of like, really? I've got gray in my beard.
Yep.
Like, you're going to make me dig out my ID?
Happens to me all the time.
Frank. The only time it's ever happened, and it hasn't been recently, I think it was probably 5 years ago, but I was in my 30s. And it was in and around the time that all the students are back. And I mean, obviously the new liquor store employees are just told, just card everybody.
Everyone.
Doesn't matter if they look like they're your mom. Just card them. That way you're going to catch all the issues.
Yeah.
And even then, I don't know if they're necessarily worried about catching anybody. I think they just want to make sure that, hey, I checked.
Like, yep.
It's not my bad that they have a really good fake ID. You know, I think if not checking is a part of the problem. But we're both old enough to drink, so that's good, given all the technical issues that I just hurtled through to get the show started 20 minutes late tonight. Sorry, folks. Looks like I do know how to fix it in the future, though. So from now on, at least when stuff happens, I can fix it. It's probably one of my biggest issues, like a pet peeve, is when something is wrong and I don't have a solution and there's nothing, or the solution that should work doesn't. You know, it's like when you're coding a website and you're like, mm-hmm. I know this code does X, and you enter the code and it does Y, and you're just kind of like, but I triple checked it, and you don't understand. And there's just like certain things that are just not translating. And it's really
my favorite. My favorite part is then when you go back by and you try it again the next day and it works and you did everything
the same.
And you're like, why did it not work yesterday?
Yep.
Why is this happening?
Yep. I'm a scientist. Even in my art, I'm very methodical. Like, I mean, I have a very strict process that I follow because it allows me to repeat it. Because when a client says, I like that one, can you make that one for me, but with this kind of subject matter? And I say yes, because I can remember what I did on that art piece. Or at the very least, I can go into the Photoshop file and look at what I did and then repeat it. And if I repeat it and it doesn't work, like, impossible. Mm-hmm. I found one of the, I remember when I was printing my book, that was one of the most infuriating experiences of my life. And you're trying to get something that, you know, looks good on screen to print off in a certain, you know, color, or just having things that are completely, in a process that should be controlled, having things that are complete variables and no one has control over. You know, it's like sometimes you go to a cheaper print shop and they've got, you know, too much magenta on the drum or not enough, or the toner starting to run out. And it's like, well, put a new toner cartridge in or change it up or something. And all that depends on is when you've gone to go get that stuff printed. You know, you could go to get that stuff printed the moment that they put in a new cartridge in their laser printer and you get beautiful prints. And then if you're the guy that's there 10 days later, you're getting crap prints, but they're not changing the toner until it runs out, right?
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. It's like, so how, you never know
what you're going to get.
Yeah. I mean, now when I go to, I mean, those are for prints and things like that. When I, short notice stuff. But if I'm printing a book, obviously, there's a lot more care and stuff that goes involved. And that's when I'm hiring a professional. It's their job to noodle over this stuff and make sure that they get it right. But even then, like, I'm still dealing with trying to get digital files that look different in RGB into CMYK. And I mean, I've calibrated my monitor to the best that I can. And even then, I still can't get colors to look right. You know, even monitor to monitor, browser to browser, it's just like, you would think that they would just at least agree. Like, I don't care about the user experience. I understand that Chrome is different from Safari and that's different from Firefox and all that kind of stuff. And users are going to like what they like. But for the love of Pete, just agree on what red looks like. Like, everything's got a code. Everything's got a hex code or an RGB value. Just assign that value and have a standard that says this has to look the same. And then at least have the failure be on the hardware side on the user. So, like, if you're looking at a really shitty red, it's probably your monitor, you know?
Yep.
Anyway. Not hard to tell that I have been noodling around in technical stuff this week. As I
it sounds it. It sounds
slowly.
It.
Yeah. On a much lighter note, I want to point everybody's attention to Kickstarter. I was talking with Hammond earlier today, and he wanted to remind everybody that Soundography is still going on Kickstarter. So if you want to look up Soundography, just do a Google search for that. It's the third link on Google right now. And it will take you to a crash course in music, one band at a time. They are $200 away from funding, and they have 6 days.
Oh, they'll make it.
Yeah, I hope they do. It's a really fun project. Hammond and Brian are going to be doing some music history, and they're both just really steeped in what they do. I'm part of the project in that they're going to be bringing me on board to do the album art and the poster. So something they have something kind of like a brand and a little bit of swag to dole out to people and to sell. And I'm excited about it. I'm really looking forward to doing the piece. I'm really hoping that they get to do this first season of the podcast, because I think once they get things off the ground, it will just take off running. And I think after that, they'll have enough of a following that it'll be self-sustaining.
I agree with you 100%.
Yeah. So it's kickstarter.com/projects, and it is a Coverville. I can't read the whole URL, but I think it's /Coverville. Yes, it is. But if you do just a Google search or a Kickstarter search for Soundography, you will find it. And please, if you're interested in music, if you like music history, then consider becoming a backer. They've got levels of all sorts, even a simple $1 backing pledge. And at this stage of the game, you know, we get a couple hundred people in the next couple days to give them a dollar. Good to go.
There you go.
Yeah. Then that's the thing I like so much about crowdfunding and micropayments and stuff these days, is that there's always somebody asking for your money, right? Whether they're asking for your time, which is worth money because you're browsing the web and you're looking at ads. You and I were talking about that earlier, you know, or, you know, they're asking you to buy a book or buy a t-shirt or something like that. And what I like so much about these new methods is that a lot of the time they're asking for your support, but the option is there. Do you have a dollar?
Yeah.
And even if you want to give a little bit more than that, give your dollar and then tell a friend. And then, you know, next thing you know, Soundography gets made.
And, exactly.
Yeah. So it's such a cool environment. I know that, and you can probably speak more to this, indie games and stuff do a lot of this now too.
There's a ton of them that do it. But unfortunately, one of the biggest problems they've run into lately is there's so many doing Kickstarters that it overwhelms the market. And a bunch of stuff falls to the wayside. And the other issue is games take so long to make that there's stuff that was Kickstarted 3 and 4 years ago, and it's still not out yet. And people are getting aggravated. And some of them just drop to the wayside and go, oh, yeah, by the way, that game you Kickstarted, helped us Kickstart, yeah, it got canceled. Sorry. And they leave their people high and dry. There's been a bunch of that in the last year or two as well. And it's like... I'm very picky about what I Kickstarter now.
Yeah, if you're developing something that's going to take that long, and you're using Kickstarter to the point, like to the way that it's supposed to be, which is not just a pre-order, but something that helps you actually develop the thing or the product, then you do have to have an extraordinarily high level of communication. It's not a Kickstarter project. It's an Indiegogo project. It's a Lissy Marlin's book.
Yep.
I want to say... I think we're coming up on 2 years, because I know we had them on Comics Coast to Coast to interview them about the book, and I want to say that was 2 years ago. I funded them, like I helped them fund the book. I got a copy. I didn't get anything crazy. I'm not waiting for, you know, original art, something like that. I just got a copy of the book for myself. And I know through some of the updates that there were some technical difficulties with printings and stuff like that. And as an independent artist, I can appreciate the fact that, I mean, even though Lissy has an editor, Barbara, that the two of them are still just two people trying to put together a book and trying to do it right. So having spoken with them in an interview, I have a higher level of trust than maybe the average backer. But even then, like I just emailed them today and be like, you know, guys, it's been 3 or 4 months. Not being impatient, I'm just curious. And I think that's the point where you can, you know, I'm a very understanding person. That's the point when you're going to get some chaff from some people who are not so patient. So I think that, you know, kind of as a something that I'm making a mental note on, because, you know, I've got some projects that are coming up later this year, that I don't want to over-communicate, but the last thing that you want is someone that has backed a project on Kickstarter or anything else and have them wonder where it is.
Yeah.
And if they ever wonder, then you've potentially lost them. But if they... Right. Or if the moment that they wonder and they just don't get around to emailing you, if like the next day or within that week, there's a newsletter that says, oh, hey, here's an update. Here's where we are, you know. And that's why I think that, you know, even prepping people and saying like, hey, after this funds, you're going to get a weekly newsletter that's going to tell you how little or how much we've made in terms of advancing this project. Even if it's the minutest, most insignificant thing, still tell people, still have that channel open. And I have had that experience recently. It's sad. I haven't even opened it yet because I want to do an unboxing video. But I got Lois's book. And mm-hmm. between Lois and 3D Total, the publisher that she worked with, I basically got an email twice a week during the Kickstarter campaign. but in a good way.
Yeah.
Like when it started and then when it ended. Maybe not so much in the middle. But then since... It's been at least once a week. And I want to say just once a week because I didn't feel like it was a lot. But every week it was just status updates. Sometimes it wasn't even about the book. Sometimes it was about the extras. Sometimes it was about the tutorial videos and stuff. The only complaint is that I had to email the publisher and inquire about a bonus that I was supposed to get that I didn't. Like that was a digital thing, and I should have got that right away as opposed to waiting. I still don't have it as far as I know. I'm also having a very busy week, so I'm not entirely sure. I have to go double check that to check my inboxes and I, you know, check when I sent that email to them to see whether they've had enough time to respond and all that kind of thing. Because now that I've got the book, I'm funny enough, I'm less worried about the extras because the extras, they were stretch goals. So, when I made when I backed the project, these were not part of the equation. I only found out that I got them later on down the line when they funded, you know, past their goal. And they said, oh, hey, everybody that backed at the 40-pound level or whatever it was, you're going to get these extra things too. And I was like, hey, cool. You know, great. I didn't expect those. But it's funny how now that they've said, hey, you're going to get these, I'm just like, well, where are they?
Well, and sometimes you have to do that. Sometimes because you bought so early on, they somewhere along the line, your name got dropped somewhere. You know.
Yeah, and it's a pretty successful campaign, so they've got a lot of names and stuff to deal with. I can appreciate that, and I think at some point I'll be able to get a hold of somebody.
Probably. More than likely.
It's funny how those things go. But anyway, that was a long sidetrack from Soundography, which is everybody should go check out on Kickstarter, and hopefully support it. Before we get into the meat of the show, we have listener email. Dun, dun, dun. If you can imagine that.
Email.
Surprise, surprise, it's Will. He was basically just elated that we read his email, so he wrote in again. Joel, since my last message was so positively received, I figured I'd write in again. This time with a question. With Game of Thrones Season 6 on the horizon, how are you coping with the uncharted waters we have entered? Are you excited or dreading not having the books for guidance? Oddly, I find this to have a strange parallel to Civil War, where the book is there, but we likely hold few answers for the movie. To answer your question, Will, I have been avoiding all things Game of Thrones related for weeks because Game of Thrones, the television show, is one of the very, very few shows that I am very excited when it starts. I'm on the edge of my seat. I cannot wait to find out what happens. Especially now that they're in uncharted territories. And that's something I'm really looking forward to this season, is that they're beyond, in some ways, where the books are and where I have read. So the last 5 years of The Citadel Cafe, of me kind of comparing them to the books, or trying to bite my tongue for people that haven't read the books and not spoil books on the show or not spoil the show because I know what I know. I'm really looking forward to the uncharted waters. Well, we're going to be treading some stuff that's already been in the books too, because not everything that happened in book 4 and 5 happened in the TV show yet.
Right.
So there's going to be some familiar territory as well. But that's another thing, is I don't know how or when they're going to tell that. They've juked and jived the timeline around a little bit. So I'm really looking forward to it. I am not looking forward, however, to spoilers. So I'm warning friends, family, countrymen, don't spoil things. I will unfollow you in a heartbeat. I had a lot of issues with that last year or the year before. I can't remember. And I spoiled something for myself, and all I was doing was looking up when the HBO premiere was happening. I couldn't remember if it was the 22nd or the 28th.
And then next thing you know, you found out the entire first episode's plot.
Yeah, in a five-word, one-line summary that some moron put on Wikipedia. Like,
yep.
All you need is the episode number and the air date and potentially the name of the episode. And I say potentially because these names, if they're not really well thought out, writers, producers,
they spoil networks, the entire episode.
Yeah. You know, like, hey, this is the last episode of our season. We're calling it Back to Normal. It's like, well, I guess everything goes back to normal then. You know,
just, yep.
Unless they're being really sarcastic and, you know, kind of biting their thumbnail when they write that, then that's not the case. Anyway, So I'm avoiding everything Game of Thrones. And I want to give a shout out to my sister who texted me the other day, and the first thing that she said was, have you seen the Game of Thrones trailer? She didn't start with her questions. She started with, have you seen it? And I was like, no, I haven't. So she goes, okay, I was going to ask you about who got stabbed in the chest and blah, 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 blah. She revealed nothing. You know, she was very, very cordial. She understands.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And that's the thing. Like, it just, you have to, with people enjoying their entertainment, you know, I work really hard for an hour of relaxing and watching Game of Thrones. If someone ruins that for me an hour before the show, or an hour before I get a chance to watch the show, I get stabby.
You know, I'm not a spoilery guy. I don't care if things get spoiled for me. It really doesn't bother me.
You sure are
weird. I feel like I enjoy things more when things do get spoiled for me. And this latest season of The Walking Dead, there was a big thing that was supposed to happen at the end of the season, and literally the entire last episode is a giant tease of what's coming at the end of the episode. And then lo and behold, it didn't get spoiled for me, and I wish it had, because I watched in anticipation, and then AMC pulled a really jerky move at the end.
Ugh.
And I was like, oh, come on. It's one of those, you got to wait until next season to find out what actually happened. And you're like, what? No. Screw you.
Yeah, I guess the lesson coming into Game of Thrones is just respect the fact that not everybody gets to see it. We live in an on-demand world. You know, people watch things the next night when I get home from work. So my livelihood depends on being on the internet and answering emails and, you know, checking that kind of stuff. And you know, social media is a big part of what I do. And I hate during Game of Thrones for 10 weeks that I basically have to go internet dark on Monday until I can watch it, to the point where I've actually started watching it on my lunch break. Like, I can deal with not checking stuff Monday morning, but then at lunchtime Monday, I'm watching Game of Thrones. It's a much better mood and a much better experience to watch it in the evening with dinner when I can relax and not going back to work. But that doesn't seem to work.
I can say, unfortunately for me, it doesn't work. My day job is literally on social media all day.
Mm, yeah.
So even if I wanted to hide from spoilers, they're everywhere. So yeah. I can't hide from them. And even when I'll be on Facebook for work, and right there in the news feed, it'll be like, such and such happened in Supergirl last night. You'll be like, oh, okay. All right. Well, I'll look forward to watching that when I get home.
Yeah. I feel like maybe your work is what's been conditioning you to just have to deal with all those kind of stuff.
Yes, it is. I think that's a big part of it.
You know, you're just like, I can't mind spoilers, because if I did, my day job would be miserable.
Like, yep.
If that was a pet peeve, that would be a really hard pill to swallow. So remind me, Lou, have you read the Game of Thrones books?
Yes, all of them.
Okay, all right. So
I am all caught up.
Same question for you then from Will. Are you excited or dreading the departure into the new territory?
I'm excited because I think they're going to be close to what the books are. I don't think that they're going to go like off the rails. I think they know what George R. R. Martin is going to have in the next book. So we're going to kind of get, for the most part, what the next book is. But I also worry that now that it's straying from the books a little bit, that HBO is going to go a little crazy and make it a little too HBO-y. We're going to get more nudity than we've ever gotten before. Mm. We're going to get more blood and violence than we've ever gotten before because, oh, the book isn't out yet, so we can do what we want, is what I'm thinking they're going to do.
I hope
so. I'm excited, but I'm also apprehensive, makes sense.
I feel like somebody there has to realize that the reason why Game of Thrones is so popular is because it sticks so closely to the books.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, it makes some deviations, and most of them I'm okay with. There's certain parts of those books that I feel are a long slog. And
some
very confusing points where there's more characters than you know what to do with. And it's very hard to keep that all straight.
There's a whole character that they introduce in the last book. And he didn't... His name is mentioned before, but he shows up and he does this thing and he gets killed. And he has something to do with the dragons. And his whole character doesn't exist in the TV show. That whole plot line doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, good, because they introduce him in that book, and then they kill him in that book.
Yeah. And
you're like, what was he even there for?
Yeah.
Things like that have been trimmed out of the show, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah. Well, I guess we can move into what we've been watching, speaking of Game of Thrones. And if you are unaware, in 2 weeks' time, 2 weeks' time? Yeah, no, wait a minute. 2 weeks plus 27. No, so 28th. When's the premiere? 25th?
25th or 26th, I think.
Right, whatever that Sunday is.
Yeah.
So the 27th, which is the April episode, last April episode for The Citadel Cafe, will be turning into the Game of Thrones show for the next 10 weeks. So it's good for us because we only have to watch one thing. But it's bad for people that have not read or watch the series because we spoil it. So we always give warnings, but just kind of letting everybody know that if you are looking for a really good excuse to binge watch Game of Thrones and get all caught up, now's the chance. Hammond did it. So can you.
He's a trooper. I can't believe he managed to do that. So
yeah, that's a lot of blood and guts and craziness all in one Hawaii vacation. Not this one, but the last one last year. So you mentioned Supergirl, and that was one of the things that I watched. Actually, I just watched it today.
I'm curious as to what you think of this episode, because I have not watched it yet.
Okay.
So you can spoil it. I don't care. But
okay. Well, heads just up, telling I'm, it. I'll just talk about a few it. Things that are kind of spoilery, but just to give the audience a head up, if you have not watched Supergirl, I can't really say my spiel without getting into some details about the show. There's two kind of standoff points. The first is a talk between Cat Grant and Supergirl, during which it is basically a slap in the face to Zack Snyder and the Batman v Superman mistake. Everybody that I've listened to on the internet post Batman v Superman has said, you don't understand what Superman stands for. He stands for hope. That's what he stands for. They've mentioned it a couple times in the season of Supergirl, but this was an absolute like monologue. And you could, I mean, maybe I'm a little sensitive because I feel that way and I've seen Batman v Superman, but it just felt aimed right down the middle of, you know, Cat Grant tamping the S on her chest and saying, this means hope. You give me hope. It's a good speech. And I just sat there listening to it going, yes, how does this CBS TV show that is not perfect understand this? And because they understand this and the movie doesn't, like, I'm just so much more invested in this show. The gripe that I have with this episode as a whole was that everybody in it is just doing what the script tells them.
Yeah.
It is rough. No one is... Supergirl spends almost the entire episode pacing and doing nothing.
Yeah, I can say, I feel like part of the issue we're running into at this part in this part of the series is they've been waiting to find out if they were going to get renewed or not. And I think that the writing was like, well, do we start wrapping up plot lines so we can end the show, or do we start leading into stuff so we can make a second season?
Mm. I like that they've been doing 2 to 3 episode arcs. I enjoy the cliffhanger end of the episodes. In some episodes, it's the only reason that keeps me coming back. In yeah. other episodes, it makes a lot of sense, and it's got some weight to it. I still say that the, I can't remember the name of the plant, but the chest plant that was on her that caused her to hallucinate, and then, no, not the chest plant, that was a bad one. It's the Red Kryptonite episode.
Yeah.
Stands up as the best episode so far this season as far as character, and as far yeah. as making you feel that these characters are real, like they have real emotions and they're reacting normally to situations. This show, everybody was just doing something for the sake of doing something, you know, like, for example, there is a mind control thing happening and everybody, including Superman, which is dumb, is under this mind control thing, but Kara, Cat Grant, Maxwell Lord, her sister, not Cat Grant's sister, but Kara's sister, I can't remember her name right now, and Martian Manhunter are not yeah. affected. So Martian Manhunter and Agent Danvers are unaffected because they are not in the city, and this thing has a range. So then they go back to the city to help save it. Now, Martian Manhunter, it's already been pretty clear that he can block out the signal. But then Agent Danvers convinces him to bring her with him? No, never would happen.
No.
Not in a million years. That was dumb. And then the other... what was the other part that was... the Maxwell Lord stuff. Like, he created a headpiece to block out this mind control signal for himself. And then he gave Cat Grant earrings that also do the same thing. And had Cat Grant not put on the earrings, aka the script says that she puts on the earrings, she would have been affected like everybody else.
Right.
And the only reason she wasn't is because they needed her at the office to have the talk with Supergirl. Like, it just...
Yep.
That kind of writing drives me nuts. Now, there was some... And this is the thing. It's not a completely... It didn't fail totally. There were some really impressive moments. There's a part where the bad guy, can't remember his name because he's a stupid bad guy, sends 3 bystanders off a ledge falling to their death. James Olsen, Wynn, and some random girl that we've never seen before. So, surprise, random girl that we've never seen before hits the pavement, but Supergirl can save Wynn and James, because yep. she can only really carry 2 people. She's only got 2 hands, and they all went at the same time in different yep. directions. So she failed. You know, bad guy takes Supergirl's weakness, which is protecting the innocent, and exploits it and beats her at that moment. That was impressive. You know, it's in one of those shows where usually things are kind of written neat and tidy and everything ends up happy. It's not happy. So there were some good moments, but overall, the villain stuff, not Brainiac, what she called now, Indigo. Indigo in her first episode was great. Indigo in this episode was terrible.
I feel like it's time for them to start wrapping up the other Kryptonians plotline and getting rid of that so that next season we can introduce a new villain and move on.
Exactly. You know, there needs to be a new villain, and there needs to be a strong female villain. They touched on it very briefly with, what was her name? She's one of the Dark Side Furies. She was imprisoned in Fort Roz, and she escaped. She was going on, in the beginning of the episode, she was going on a boat supposed to have married Superman, but didn't. That would be a great foil for Supergirl, because she's
right.
super strong. She, you know, they had a fist fight at the DEO, and it was a pretty even match until Supergirl outsmarted her. You know, like, just
right.
that kind of stuff is awesome. Like, yeah, then you've got to deal with, like, well, collateral damage, and like, how do we combat this person? And like, that kind of stuff would be cool. They just need to get away from this whole Kryptonian thing, because it's an absolute stalemate. And there's no explanation as to why. They give a very loose one. But essentially, Kara calls Superman for help. he's off planet, but then eventually comes running. And as soon as he gets within the city limits, he gets affected by the mind control and kneels before the bad guy. They don't show any of that. They only show this clip, and they rise the music. Her phone goes off, and it goes, it's Clark, and it says, on my way. And you're thinking, like, oh my God, are they going to do what they said they were going to do? Is Superman actually going to show up and give her advice or help or whatever? And nope, he flies just enough into frame for them to keep him CG, and then he stops, and then he joins the rest of the mind control crowd because he's been affected.
Yeah.
Now, the whole story behind this stuff is that it only affects humans, not Kryptonians.
And but yet he's affected.
Yet he's affected. And the excuse given by somebody, I think it was Maxwell Lord, is that Superman has been on the planet so long that his brain has been turned into human brain. I wanted to punch my TV. Like, it was the dumbest thing. And it was also a huge tease. Like, you've gone through this entire season, the first third of the season, you over-mention Superman, and all it does is draw the attention to the fact that you can't have him on the show. And then it gets to a happy spot where he says, hey, I'm here if you need me, but I'm not going to overstep. And Kara's like, I need to do this on my own. And you're like, perfect. Okay, good. So she's got his support, but she doesn't need him. So she's not going to, it's not going to be this back and forth all the time. And then, they had it. They had it at the beginning of this episode where she goes to the Fortress of Solitude because she needs to know what Myriad is. She needs to talk to the Kryptonian, robot guy, the librarian guy, and ask him what's going on. And she asks where Kal-El is, and he says he's off world dealing with another matter. Perfect. You know, you get the Superman mention, but that's it.
Right.
You know, and a good excuse. He's off with the Justice League, probably fighting Darkseid, whatever. Has to happen. He's got other more important things going on. Leave it at that. I don't need him to come back, because him coming back served no purpose. Right? He came back, he got mind controlled, they had to explain the mind control, and then you never see or hear about him again for the rest of the entire episode. It does nothing other than tease the audience. And it's just bad writing.
Yeah, so, they either need to just cope with the fact that he's not going to show up in the show, they can't get him in the show, and just stop mentioning him altogether, or do that. Mention that he's off-world, or say he's on a thing, and just leave it at that. Stop having her, like, sending him text messages and stuff. And you're not, that's just it's a cheap ploy.
Yeah. I like some of the texting. I think I like that kind of flavor when it's positive. Like, when she does something really cool and he texts her saying, like, nice save. I caught that on the news, you know. Like,
yeah.
That kind of thing is cool. Like, I like that kind of nod, because she's looking for his approval.
Right.
You know, because everybody's got a role model, and he happens to be hers. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think you're right. Like, I think they have to find a place where that can exist. And I think a really fun thing that they could do in the show would be to bring in Clark as, like, a one-off episode, but not have him turn into Superman.
Yes.
Like, just have him be Clark, and as if it's, like, something's important happening, or some sort of training going on or something like that, where he's just kind of like, you can handle this. I don't know. I'm good, you know, or I'm on vacation. Like, you can do this, you know?
Yeah.
If they do it that way and he never turns into Superman, I think it would add a lot of flavor. And I think you might pull in some extra numbers and stuff like that.
Right.
I mean, that's if they're going to go more of this Superman Clark thing. But what the show needs is just more independent stuff away from, like, they've already delved into Martian Manhunter. They've got several big DC villains that they've touched on. I'm okay with the show just inventing a villain.
Yep.
You know, like, just give Supergirl some, you know, crazy, I don't know, superhuman or mad scientist or somebody that's a robot that she can smash, and it's not going to be too violent for TV. You know, like, just have something like that, you know? I mean, for the lack of I know I'm crossing universes here, but, like, you know, something like an Ultron bad guy would be perfect, because it's a physical thing that she can get involved in. It challenges because it's got that internet kind of techno thing, and there's going to be all these stupid robot foot-shoulder drones that she can just tear apart And and she can punch first and ask questions later, and then outsmart the machine, and like stuff like that would be fantastic. You know, it would be modern.
I think we'll get better writing next season. I think that this first season, they didn't know what they wanted. They wanted to make sure they pulled in numbers, so they played everything safe. I think next season we get better writing.
Yeah, and I don't want to sound like I'm being too down on it. This last episode was not great, but I still, as a whole season, it is one of the better shows on television.
That Flash episode was awesome.
It was so fun, you know, and fun is the main thing. It's a fun show. I really... Even there were still parts of this episode. It was a pretty dour episode, but there were still some fun moments, you know, worked in there. So I hope they can continue on the right track and keep Supergirl, you know, and not have it turn into, I'm trying to think of a really good example that went poorly in my mind. I don't want it to turn into, not Battlestar Galactica. What's one of those sci-fi shows that was just really...
Stargate Atlantis?
Yeah, like stuff like that. I don't want it to be so campy or so just because.
It needs to borrow more from Flash.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, agreed.
Okay. Every superhero show should borrow a little bit more from Flash.
Yeah. So anyway, I've been on this crazy Supergirl rant. What have you been watching, man?
I know you've touched on it a little bit, but I've been watching my second viewing of Daredevil Season 2. I've already watched it once, and I'm about halfway through a second viewing of the second season. And I gotta say, I love the Punisher.
Oh, yeah. No, he's great.
I'm not a huge fan of John Bernthal, but... And he most things he does a southern accent, because I believe he is from down south. And his accent is just enough New Yorker to sound New Yorker, but just enough that you don't go, oh yeah, he's a New Yorker. You go, oh yeah, he could be from anywhere, but he sounds kind of New York, like he's from New York, you know?
Yeah.
And just, it's better than season one. And I didn't think I'd be able to say that. I thought season two would fall flat. And my only gripe with the whole season is the Elektra plot line's kind of boring. I didn't really care.
Oh, I would say very boring.
Yeah. And it wasn't even her. I enjoyed her as a character. She was annoying, but her character made sense. But I just didn't find the ninjas that intimidating.
Yeah, the issue that I had with Elektra was she is this loose cannon that doesn't listen to anyone.
Anyone, yeah.
Am I pretty apt in summing up her character?
Yes.
So all the confrontation that happens between Daredevil and Elektra is Daredevil shouting and telling her what to do. I don't know what he expects to happen, but it's if you tell her to sit down, you might as well expect her to stand up. And and it goes on for episodes, and everything else that's happening is interesting and cool. But every time there's a confrontation, whether it's friend or foe, with Elektra and Daredevil, I wanted to just fast forward. Like, I thought it was horrible. And they were rehashing a lot of the same conversations that Daredevil was having with Punisher, which I enjoyed. You know, they had it, and the Elektra thing. I've always thought the Elektra thing was kind of dumb, and I didn't understand it.
I agree with you completely.
You know, I just and not for a moment that I feel that they were ever a couple. Like, there was no chemistry as far as how they were written,
right,
and stuff like that. I could just
and,
it was not.
And the other thing I got to say is Foggy is really good this season.
Yes,
I was rewatching the episode where there's the two gang members in the hospital that are about to brawl it out. And he, stops them and says, I'm going to be the dumb public defender that ends up having to defend one of you idiots. And, you know, this is not the place to do this. And he gives them, this whole spiel. And the guy's like, I should just stab you or something like that. And he's like, go ahead, add to the witness count, you know. And it's just, his writing this season was way more clever and fun than it was the previous season.
Yeah.
So... his whining that he keeps going out at night and fighting was getting old, but I understood where he was coming from. He didn't want to see his friend get killed, you know?
Yeah, but I was hoping that it was going to last a little bit longer, the original banter, you know, in the first couple episodes where there's jokiness and stuff like that. I like that kind of stuff. It's fun. Like there's something that we can all identify with the normal character that knows the superhero and is essentially living vicariously. You know, like you want Foggy to be saved by Daredevil and have him witness the fight and have Daredevil do this thing. And because Foggy knows who he is, have Foggy like walking home going, you know, and fake punching the air. And it's like, yeah, that was cool, you know, and because we all live vicariously through that. But when he turns and starts to become a little bit of a broken record, it does kind of grate on me. But yeah, I thought he was a lot better this season than last. I wish that, oh God, what's her name? The secretary, now reporter.
Karen.
I wish that Karen and Matt's story would have started a few episodes sooner.
Yes.
I thought that would have been better. Go ahead.
And I loved what they did with her character, taking her out of the secretary role and making her into her own role. And she could easily fit into any of the Marvel storylines now as someone that's a reporter.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I mean, she's like, such a good actor.
Well, not just that, but something goes wrong with the Civil War plot line coming up. She could be they could be a headline somewhere, and she wrote the headline that shows up in a news feed somewhere or something. Yeah, and they could do something like that now. So, yeah. I mean, it's definitely, I think Netflix still has a hit on their hands. They have not said if they're going to do a season 3, but I think it's safe to assume that we're going to probably get a season 3.
Yeah, that or it's...
going to start tying into
like the group, the Defenders, is it?
The Defenders, yep.
Yeah.
Which they've already said that there's already a script in the process.
Mm-hmm.
So, mm-hmm. I mean, I'm excited to see what they do with that. There's a lot of things that they can do with that going in that direction. But I also know that there's been hints that these characters might start making tie-ins to the movies soon, too.
Mm. I would love to see Daredevil in an Avengers movie.
Well, and if you think about it, at the end of this season, he's not really a practicing lawyer anymore, and he's just a guy that goes out and fights at night and rescues people. It would be very easy to add him to an upcoming Avengers movie or an upcoming Marvel movie without a whole lot of effort.
Yeah, and the thing is, like, he doesn't deserve to be in like the offshoot. Like, he doesn't, it's not like we don't want him in Ant-Man 2, you know? Like,
right.
We want him in like an Avengers movie, even if it's just like an encounter at some point.
Yeah.
You know, like that would be like a handoff or some sort of, you know, just that superhero camaraderie between him and, Captain America or something like that. Speaking of, actually, I saw a longer clip from Captain America Civil War.
Oh, the MTV, fight scene.
I think it was the MTV Movie Awards or something like that.
Yeah.
Man, I am on board.
Yeah, I'm very excited, and it's interesting because unlike Batman versus Superman, Marvel let this out. Has done their previews a month ahead of time, and people have seen it a month ahead of time, and everybody loves it. Like across the board, it's getting rave reviews to the point where Marvel has said, no, reviewers can start releasing their reviews as soon as they want, kind of thing. So they're very much behind it, and they're very much in support of it, unlike Batman versus Superman, where everybody was like, oh, yeah, hold those reviews.
Yeah, well, because, I mean, Batman v Superman was doing damage control from the second that they said print. Like, that, it's just, you know, you can tell. I mean, Batman v Superman was everywhere. Times Square, McDonald's, Krispy Kreme donuts, like, you name it. It was every cereal aisle. Like, the movie isn't for kids. Why is it on a box of Cheerios? Like, complete and utter misunderstanding of what they're trying to do. Whereas Marvel's is like, here's two trailers and a couple of TV spots. Go see the movie. You know, like, you know, the confidence that they have in the fact that they've made a good, exciting, you know, superhero film is vastly different than the pickup sticks, you know, patchwork that we saw from the crew around Batman v Superman, which sucks because, you know, as I mentioned 2 weeks ago, like, I like the actors involved. We all want it to be good. It's not like we're wishing that WB is going to make shitty movies, but
right,
you know, such is the case. Before we get into the Internet Minute and get you out of here for Zombies Ate My Podcast, I know that you watched Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt, and I'm curious, how, like, just briefly, what was that like?
When it first came out last year, I watched the first episode, and I absolutely hated every minute of what I was watching, and I tossed it aside and said, nope, I'm never going to watch this again. And then we got caught up on basically all the shows we regularly watch, and we're looking for something else. And I said, well, maybe I'll give this another try. People keep telling me it's really good. And so I rewatched it, and I found myself rewatching the first episode laughing. It wasn't great, but there was some funny moments. And then lo and behold, you get like three episodes into this show, and they tell jokes that you wouldn't get from daytime TV or nighttime sitcoms on regular TV.
Right, because it's Netflix, right?
It's Netflix. Yeah. And it's not dirty. Like, there's no like really dirty jokes or anything, but they touch on subjects that like you can't expect them to. You don't. There's O.J. Simpson jokes towards the end of the season that you're like, they could never put this on network TV, where the guy that captured her and her other people that were, the premise is she's been locked away in a bunker by a guy that told them that the outside world is dead.
Yeah, it's like a doomsday cult.
It's like a doomsday cult. And they're now free, and now he's on trial for imprisonment, and the state's going after him. And the lawyers charging the trial are the same two lawyers that went after O.J. Simpson. And literally, they ask him questions that are helping him get off of win his case. And he's declined his own lawyer. He's defending himself. And you're like, everything is lined up so that he should totally not be winning. And they just keep asking him the dumbest questions. And like, literally, Kimmy has to show up and defend it and point out how stupid he is and point out his mistakes and stuff. And and the way they handle it is very funny. And the best part is the guy that is the Doomsday Cult is played by John Hamm.
Oh, nice.
And so he shows up, and you're like, wait, that's John Hamm. And they put him in, like, a ponytail wig, and they do everything they can to kind of make him look dorky. And you're like, wait, what? That can't be John Hamm.
Yeah.
That is such a... And he's so goofy acting, and you're like, he's so serious in Mad Men.
Yeah. I really like the character Don Draper. I don't like what he does. He's not a nice guy. But the acting and the suaveness and all that kind of stuff that came across in Mad Men. I really, really like what John Hamm did with that. And I've heard that he's done comedies, and I heard that he's very funny, but I've not actually gotten into it.
This is one of those things where he does comedy, and I'll tell you, if you don't like the first episode, still give it like two more episodes. You'll be hooked by the end of the third episode.
Yeah, it's funny. I've been trying to watch 30 Rock, and it's funny. I enjoy it. It's not bad. It's not like making my ribs sore funny.
Yeah.
But I mean, Alec Baldwin is quite, the lines that he gets are quite good. And I like Tina Fey quite a bit too, but I don't know. I think I've grown out of just sitcoms. I just don't find,
you know what? I feel the same way. There's maybe three I watch, and all three that I watch are weird.
Yeah,
they're not your typical sitcom, and that's why I like them.
The last one that I got into was Community, and it was somewhere around the second season of Community that I got grabbed by it, and I like it would just slay me.
Yep,
because the way it's the delivery, you know, it's my style of humor, but. Everything else, I just find, like, South Park and Family Guy, I can't. It's just over the top. I don't like it. None of the comedy movies that come out, I ever go see, because I don't find them funny at all. It's basically like someone saying, sit here, we're going to make you laugh, and it's basically me kind of going like, all right, but I don't believe you, you know?
And, I'm with you with that 100%.
Yeah.
Every comedy I go to see now, if I see it, I'm like... Well, it was kind of cute, I guess, but
The movies that make me laugh out loud are movies that Disney and Pixar make.
Yep.
Right? Like, those are the ones that I find have kind of a little bit of a gem of a moment. I'm trying to remember the last time that I laughed out loud during... You know what it was? It was probably the Supergirl Flash crossover.
Yep.
Like, there were some moments in that that I cackled sitting here by myself. Now, something else that might be a factor too is that I have enjoyed comedies more when I've watched them with somebody. I tend to watch a lot of media on my lunch breaks and dinner breaks here in the studio when I'm alone. So, you know, that might have a factor to it. But I remember laughing out loud to some of the 30 Rock stuff, you know, like I'm only 3 or 4 episodes into the first season. I'm sure it hits a stride and starts killing it later on. I've heard so many good things about it, but you know, I choose my entertainment so carefully these days.
I agree with you completely. I would say though, that if you're looking for something and you want to have it on in the background, this is the kind of show I would say you can put it on in the background. Well, there's some visual jokes, but I'd say as much of the jokes are her responses to things because she won't swear. So someone will say something and she'll be like, go kick the can. And you'll be like, what? And you have to think about what she just said. And what she was wanting to say was like, get the hell out of here. But she doesn't want to say hell. And you'll be like, oh, okay, I get it.
Mm-mm.
And the jokes are just... I think that's what I enjoyed about it, was it was family friendly, but you still got some of that weirdness that isn't family friendly.
Mm-hmm. It's like the innuendos in a Pixar film.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's kind of how this show feels. So.
Cool. Well, I mean, I'm sure it's, well, I mean, obviously it's a Netflix production, so it's available here in Canada. So I will have to check it out and see what I think. I enjoyed the first few episodes of Last Man on Earth, and that had kind of weird...
And then it got bad.
Yeah, but it had that kind of weird kind of premise to it, and I might try that. I'm going to move us into the Internet Minute that was brought to you by Tweaked Audio. You can go to tweakedaudio.com and check out high-performance noise-reducing earbuds. Use the code TCC at checkout for free shipping and 30% off your entire order. I have a couple of quick picks this week. The first one via Alistair McFly in our Slack chat. EPguides.com. I kind of warmed you guys up for this earlier this evening when I was talking about spoilers on Wikipedia. This is what you want in a list of episode guides. All it is the show number, the season number, the air date, and the title of the episode. If that title even exists. So you have to watch the titles. Sometimes they're not great, depending on how sensitive you are to spoilers. But there is nothing else. You have to click the link to then get the summary and get in there. So if you don't mind spoilers like you, Lou, you can find out all the stuff that you want. And if you do, you're not skimming ahead by accident, just reading and getting the wrong thing. So epguides.com, you can search for shows by name. It looks like it's a huge database. And thanks again for Alistair McFly for sharing that in the Slack chat. My second pick comes from my friend Stephanie Pelly on Twitter. She's a video game nerd, like I would say a lot of us are. And she posted some Tracer cosplay from Kotaku. I'm going to post the link in the chat room to her tweet. So for those of you who may not be that into video games, Overwatch is a new game from Blizzard. It's a first-person shooter match type game. I'm not even sure what you want to call it, arena shooter. Anyway, Tracer is one of the characters. She can travel through short distances of time and space. She's got super fast weapons, and she's basically kind of like the Flash, but in a whole bunch of different techie ways. And there is a Korean cosplayer, Tasha, I think her name is. Did I get that right?
I think so.
I think so. Yes, Tasha. Who, one, looks a lot like Tracer to begin with, but then also has put in a lot of time and effort into some Tracer cosplay. And these photos on Kotaku, they really kind of show you a little bit of the behind the scenes about how they made them. But man, do they ever look good. Like, it's a lot of fun.
At first, I thought it was actual footage from the video game. I didn't even realize it was a photo at first.
Yeah, that's how good they are. If you're looking at them in thumbnails, you can tell close up that it's a little bit different, but man, they do a really good job. And one of them is a kind of a sexy pose and it seems kind of forced, but I don't know, I can't play the game, so I can't compare. A lot of them look just like the poses from the media that I've seen, the promotional stuff,
right?
But it's a very, very cool costume, and I love that people just the technology exists that people can make their own props like this or pay someone to have them made. You know, just it's also just a fun, cool, positive thing, you know?
Yeah.
With all the crap, you know, that surrounds video games online, I feel like cosplay for the most part, I know everything has got its issues, but I feel like I see a lot more positive stuff around cosplay.
It's definitely coming into popularity in the mainstream culture, which is nice.
Yeah.
You don't see people getting made fun of because they wore a costume to a convention anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of the norm.
Yeah, and something I like about the Tracer outfit in general, which is goes to Blizzard's design, is that she's got pretty functional clothing. Like, she's got holsters for her guns. She's in spandex tights because she's a speedster. Like, she runs really fast. She's in sneakers, not high heels. She's in a little British leather coat with like a visor on, like ski goggles to keep the wind out of her face.
Yep.
And she's not in a low-cut, you know, thing with her boobs hanging out. Like, I mean, everything is kind of all sporty and tucked in. Like, she doesn't have a lot of skin showing. And really what it is, it's her face and her elbows. Like, you know.
Yep.
It's very tastefully done. I mean, there are some other characters in Overwatch that have a sexier look to them. But that's also part of their character too. Like, they're not forced.
Right.
But for the most part, I like the fact that the body types represent kind of like different walks and stuff like that. And it's not kind of like the typical Lara Croft kind of big boob, you know, sort of character, which is great. You know, it's nice to have that kind of stuff out there. So those are my picks. Thanks to Alistair and Stephanie for sharing that stuff. What's your pick?
My pick is if you haven't caught it in the last day or so, Doctor Strange now has a trailer.
So good.
I'm really excited for this, and it's weird to see Tilda Swinton as a bald, like, kung fu master.
Yeah. That was one of the coolest scenes in that trailer.
Yes.
Yeah. I was a little disappointed we didn't get a closer look at Strange.
I think they're saving that for the next trailer.
Yeah.
I think we're going to get that in the next trailer. I think that's how it'll start, too. Yeah.
This would be an official teaser, would it?
They're calling it a teaser, but I think it's more of a trailer than a teaser.
Yeah.
It's just not showing you him.
Yeah.
So
do we ever get to see him speak?
You hear him speak.
Yeah.
There's a spot where he says, somebody says something about, like, I don't believe in mysticism.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's him doing his American accent.
I was just about to say, so we've got Benedict Cumberbatch doing an American accent, which, have we heard him do before?
I'm not sure.
He didn't do it in Con, did he? He didn't do it in...
No. No. I think he used his British accent in that.
Yeah. I really enjoy him as an actor, and his speaking voice is just ridiculous. I mean, Smog was just fantastic. So, I'm really looking forward to this. Which is weird, because normally I don't like magic in my comics. Like, normally that's not a thing for me. At least not in the same world as superheroes. Like, I prefer, if I'm reading a magic comic, well, if there's going to be dragons and magic and all kinds of stuff, well, hey, bring it. But, you know, Superman versus magic, it's always been weird for me. But Doctor Strange looks like a good movie. And it's like I keep mentioning time and time again, you know, Marvel's got my money.
Yes, they do. They keep making it. I'll keep going.
Yep. Exactly. Even something as unique and what's the word I'm looking for? Not as grandiose as Ant-Man was still really enjoyable.
Yep, I've seen it a couple of times now, and every time I see it, I'm like, yep, there's a reason why I like this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't see it in theater, but I would say that if I had paid to go see it in theater, I would have enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that wraps up this episode of the Citadel Cafe. We record live every Wednesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern on thecitadelcafe.com. Our mobile audio stream is provided by alphageekradio.com, and the music for the show was composed by Kevin MacLeod. Email the show at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or find us by name on Twitter and Facebook. You can also go to iTunes to leave us a review, just like Phil Rude, who is a regular in our chat room. This is the first iTunes review we've had in a very long time, so much appreciated, Phil. I feel weird reading this, but I have to, because Phil said some really, really nice things. So Joel Duggan is doing something really cool with the Citadel Cafe. It's a pop culture podcast, and yes, it's true. There's no shortage of them on the internet. What I like about TCC is that it's fun and casual. Joel has a rotating collection of guests and hosts and a chat room that all take place in a conversation about what they're enjoying, consuming, and looking forward to. In short, Joel is not just podcasting, he's building a community. It's a great troll-free group, and it all feels really organic. Casual conversation you would have at an actual cafe. It's fun to listen, and I'm happy to take part every week. And if you want to talk about the geeky things you are into with an awesome group of people, I urge you to come to the cafe too. Phil, thank you very much. That's incredibly flattering. I'm really happy that you're part of this community, and I'm sure everybody else in the chat room is happy for you as well. If you would like to join in this community, you can do that at Patreon. It's patreon.com/the Citadel Cafe. We are just like, you know, a lot of the other crowdsourcing stuff we talked about earlier this episode. If you'd like to help out in more ways than just an iTunes review, you can pop over to Patreon and maybe give a little financial support to the show. I just got the bill this month for my internet hosting. And as it works out, it's about $120 a year, and the Citadel Cafe is up around $10 an episode. So already, you, the listeners, are helping keep the Citadel Cafe afloat, because a lot of the cost of my hosting goes with hosting the audio files and stuff for the Citadel Cafe. So really appreciate it. If you go to patreon.com/thecitadelcafe, there's a bunch of information there about how to join the chat, the Slack chat, that is. Really, all you have to do is become a patron of an amount of your choosing. It's completely up to you. Could be 10 cents an episode, whatever works. It's the more people with little teeny micro transactions, not only do you financially support the show, but it also grows the community. So check it out and let us know what you think. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything that I am up to online at joelduggan.com. If you're interested in hiring me, you can just drop me a line. I am taking commissions, and I'm going to be at a convention in a week and a half. It's called Spring Geekquinox here in Halifax, so look for me there. Don't forget to check out my other podcast, Comics Coast to Coast, where myself, Brian Dunaway, and Matthew Ducharme interview comic creators, illustrators, and animators. Tomorrow night is a big night. We are interviewing Brett Bean. You have seen his character designs in a number of places. If not, look up 2D Bean on the internet. His stuff is everywhere. He's someone that I've looked up to for a very long time, so I'm very excited to talk to Brett. You can follow me on Twitter at Joel Duggan. Lou, where can people find you online?
Well, the easiest place to find me is on Twitter at Busy Zombie Lord, and chances are, if you're on the internet and you see the word the name Busy Zombie Lord somewhere, it's me. There's nobody else. And you can find my show, Zombies Ain't My Podcast, wherever you get your podcasts. We're pretty much everywhere.
And I completely broke my promise to get Lou out of here at about 30 minutes ago. Because he's going to go do Zombies Ate My Podcast with Ryan right now.
Yep, and so, in a few minutes.
So if you're listening to Alpha Geek Radio, hang in there and listen to these guys talk about zombies. You've been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.
This podcast recorded before a live internet audience. To learn how to listen and watch live, visit tunein.alphageekradio.com.